Darkness is not an affirmative force. It simply reoccupies the space vacated by the light.
This is the Hamilton Corner on American Family Radio.
And Urban Family Talk.
It should be uncomfortable for a believer to live as a hypocrite.
Delivering people out of the bondage of mainstream media.
And the philosophies of this world.
God has called you and me to be his ambassadors. Even in this dark moment. Let's not miss our moment.
And now, the Hamilton Corner.
Good evening. Welcome to this Monday, July 9th, Supreme Court nominee announcing version of the Hamilton Corner here on American Family Radio and Urban Family Talk. I am here with Jay Tross on my right, Jeff Reed on my left. Hannah is in the screening room, and we are ready to rock and roll. So much is happening in the country. I have stuff preparing and show prep to get to. This would be a good day. If I had it 2 hours, this would be a good day to have those 2 hours. First on deck, of course, is President, in terms of news, because first is a scripture, but in terms of news, President Trump's announcement of the nominee to replace Justice Antonin Scalia. According to reports, the president has already made his choice, but he has held that nomination until this evening in a primetime television announcement at 9 p.m. Eastern. Why are you laughing, Jace? 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Central Standard Time, where all of a sudden the nominee, Supreme Court nominee, has become an event. Much the master of reality television or not-so-reality television tonight will be a bit of reality television. Also, we have Netflix stepping in it again. What are they doing? It's crazy. So much to get to it. And I will tell you now, later this week, most likely it will be Wednesday. I want to talk a little bit about this hashtag walkaway campaign. A lot of people are talking about it. It's kind of caught taking social media by storm. But I'm going to ask a question. Should we really be jumping onto this as quickly as we are? So I want to talk a little bit about that, and most likely because of the news events that are happening, that will most likely be Wednesday. So I definitely encourage you to tune in on Wednesday because I have a lot on tap to discuss that. But before we go any further with the program, we have to. It's almost wish I had the hat. If y'all saw the movie Over the Top, it's an old movie when Sylvester Stallone was doing arm wrestling. Whenever it was game time, he had to turn that hat backwards. I feel like it's time to turn that hat forward and deal with the word of God, because it's very easy for me as well to get caught up with what's happening in the country to where we just bypass, right, go right by God's word. But I would like to take the opportunity, which is why I do it in the first segment of every program, to allow us to recalibrate ourselves according to God's word. And today's portion will start in Psalm chapter 33, verses 1 through 12. Psalm 33, verses 1 through 12. I'll read it and make some comments. First and foremost, the first comment I want to make is that chronologically, this psalm follows the events that are recorded in 1 Chronicles chapter 17. That is where David expresses his intention to build a house for the Lord, to make the transition, no pun intended, to move from the transitional tent and to provide an established temple for the Ark of the Covenant known as the House of God. And this is where the Lord responds to David's heartfelt sentiment with letting David know there will not be, you will never cease to have a descendant on the throne in Israel. This is a part of that. And David responds to that, or should I say the response to the events recorded in 1 Chronicles 17 are here in Psalm chapter 33. And so I only will have time to get to the first half of the psalm, but I think this is instructive for us where we are today. So here we go. Verse 1, Psalm 33, verse 1. Shout for joy in the Lord, O you righteous. Praise befits, or praise is comely to the upright. Give thanks to the Lord with the lyre. Make melody to him with the harp of 10 strings. Sing to him a new song. Play skillfully on the strings with loud shouts. For the word of the Lord is upright, and all his work is done in faithfulness. He loves righteousness and justice. The earth is full of the steadfast love of the Lord. By the word of the Lord, the heavens were made, and by the breath of his mouth, all their host. He gathers the waters of the sea as a heap. He puts the deeps in storehouses. Let all the earth fear the Lord. Let all the inhabitants of the world stand in awe of him. For he spoke and it came to be. He commanded and it stood firm. The Lord brings the counsel of the heathen to nothing. He frustrates the plans of the peoples. The counsel of the Lord stands forever. The plans of his heart to all generations. Blessed is the nation whose God is the Lord, and the people whom he has chosen as his heritage. Praise be to God. Right off the bat, you see the psalmist recording the response to God conveying to David that he would not cease to have a descendant on the throne. The response to that is, shout for joy in the Lord, O you righteous. Praise befits the upright. So first and foremost, and I know we all have different personalities. We have different makeups and things of that nature. Some of us are introverts. Some of us are extroverts. I remember in Bible school, we talked about people engaging in what we call shy worship. You know, but I also want to say there's nothing wrong with having exuberance in worship to the Lord. Shout for joy for the Lord. Express ourselves to the Lord. You probably can tell I don't have much problems getting a bit verbal in worshiping the Lord. Because when I consider, you know, I remember the seasoned saints would say, when I think about his goodness and all that he's done for me, I'm telling you, I have a hard time staying still when I think about the goodness of the Lord. But I think about how my life should have been snuffed out many times. Many of you have seen this scar on the side of my head. You don't know, but I got hit by a car when I was 7 years old. And contrary to what many may understand about little children, I wasn't doing anything wrong. I was riding my bike on the sidewalk, and a car came up on the sidewalk and hit me. But thanks be to God, the same day that I got hit by a car, I was able to play a baseball game that same day. And this scar used to go all the way down the side of my head. And that's just one. I have so many testimonies. When I think about the legacy of salvation, what the Lord went through to snatch my soul. Oh, I cannot contain it. I cannot contain it. And so then when the psalmist buttresses or accompanies that with saying praise is comely to the upright, which is why I say all the time, a worship is not merely an action or an activity. It's a lifestyle. All that God is to me, the least response I can offer him is my life. He's worthy of far more than my church attendance schedule. He's worthy of my life. Praise is comely to the upright, which is why it should be our position when we do gather to worship with the saints, that we shouldn't allow ourselves to put ourselves in a position where we have to be cajoled or cheerleaded or pep rallied into worshiping the Lord. All really that should happen is let us consider who he is. And if we are in a position of upright walk and upright mindset and upright thought, or if we're in a place where we've fallen off, where we can say, the Lord, your grace is sufficient for me. That praise is comely to the upright. And then David goes on to explain, the psalmist goes on to explain, that gives thanks to the Lord on the lyre, which is a stringed instrument, and make melody on the harp of 10 strings. Verse 3, when it says, sing to him a new song. See, sometimes we get things misconstrued. This is not a conveyance or an implication to continually make up new musical compositions for the Lord. In reality, this is an invitation in light of new experiences of God's grace that the song is in response. See, the focal point is not on us and our inventions. The focal point is on him. So that as we see him unfolding his grace like waves in a deep ocean, flowing and flowing and folding over us over again, we sing unto the Lord a new song because we've seen another evidence of his glorious grace in our behalf. Sing unto the Lord a new song because we've seen him in another dimension. I can tell you what it's like to serve the Lord as an unmarried man in college, but now I know him as a married husband and father. Oh, I sing to him a new song from a new vantage point. You see, then he goes, oh man, I have so much in this. Let me keep going. For the Lord, for the word of the Lord, and then it goes to explain some of the reasonings. For the word of the Lord is upright. Oh, I love that. For the word of the Lord is upright, that the Lord's word is not mere literary communications on a page, but it is communications of his character and his nature and his goodness and his long suffering and his loving kindness. His word is upright. And it is the same word that contains the character of who our God is that is sustaining the very terra firma that we're seated on. The very planet that we are enjoying living in, it is by this same word holder. Oh, God, it's so good. Then verses 6 through 9, the psalmist then retrenches back to creation, you know, explaining how everything that we see was made by his logos. This psalm is translated in the Septuagint. When it said his word is upright, the Septuagint records it as logos, which is the same theme that the Apostle John picks up on. It says, in the beginning was the word, and the word was made flesh. It's the same way his word is upright. Then it goes down even further. I'll go to verse 10, and this is where I want to spend a significant amount of time, the next couple of verses. So then, well, verse 8 first, because following the enunciation of the revisiting of the creation references, then verse 8 says, let all the earth, in light of seeing his overwhelming majesty in his created universe, let all the earth fear the Lord. Let all the inhabitants of the world stand in awe of him. Now, this is an amazing involvement. This is an amazing portion of scripture, because in the beginning, the psalmist is talking about praise befitting the upright. But here in verse 8, the psalmist says, in light of what we see around us, everybody in the world should be in reverential awe of him. No matter where you are, no matter where you come from. And this is why, ladies and gentlemen, you see so much fighting, so much strain and contention to conceal the wonders of his creative majesty. Because if the world were able to behold the evidence of who he is in his created universe, it'll be much harder to convince people that God doesn't exist. It would be much harder to persuade people that his word isn't true. My wife was sharing with my children and our children in our church about how evidence of God's glory is made manifest. Just in the 40s, there were archaeological digs conducted in Antarctica. And guess what they found when they drilled down in that ice? They found tropical rainforests. Now, what does that mean, ladies and gentlemen? Oh, I'm so glad you asked. That means that there was a point in the created universe's history where what we now know to be Antarctica, it was positioned somehow on this planet where the temperature and the climate was conducive to tropical norms. Kind of gives more of an indication that, as the Bible says in the Genesis account, that all the land masses were gathered to one place at one point. Kind of sudden, doesn't it? It's amazing. But the world works very hard to conceal these things from our eyes because they know, as verse 8 says, in light of whatever what we see, let all the earth fear the Lord and let all the inhabitants of the world stand in awe of him. Then verse 10, the Lord brings the counsel of the heathen to nothing. Oh, I take great confidence in that, because the talking heads could get to rocking and rolling and get to spinning words. And you're thinking, man, what is going on? The sky is falling. The sky is falling. Pump your brakes. For the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof, the world and they who dwell therein. I have no fear of climate change because I know the one who holds it all together. It was created by him and it currently is held together by him. Not an excuse to be an abuser of the Lord's planet, but certainly I have no fear that we, mere men, have the capacity to destroy it. Let me keep going. The counsel of the heathens are brought to nothing, but the counsel of the Lord, however, stands forever. The plans of his heart to all generations. In verse 12, and this is where I want to focus. Blessed is the nation whose God is the Lord, the people whom he has chosen as his heritage. As we find ourselves navigating issues like the Supreme Court nomination being made tonight, and we're seeing things happening. You probably hadn't heard this yet, but Hillary Clinton is talking about running for president again. As we see these things happening, the conversations that are happening, the walk away movement, all these things that are happening, let us make sure we don't allow ourselves to be deceived and move over into living like, though we may profess to be believers, living as though we're atheists. How does that happen? All of our faculties, all of our reasoning, all of our emotion revolves around as if there is no God. No, brothers and sisters. Blessed is the nation whose God in the Lord, whose God is the Lord. My investment is to communicate to the hearts and minds of people, to move people closer to being of the ilk where they can declare, blessed is the nation whose God is the Lord. I have no concern about whether or not the systems can be transformed. My question is, can people be transformed? Because if the people who populate the systems can be transformed, guess what happens to the system? They take on the nature and character of those who populate it.
Our next Supreme Court justice. Hi, I'm Matt Staver with Freedom's Call. This is an incredible time in history. U.S. Supreme Court Justice Anthony Kennedy announced his retirement effective the end of July. This is creating a commotion on Capitol Hill because it gives the president a second person to place on the high court. The justice in this role will have an incredible opportunity to shape the future of our nation's laws. In the past, Kennedy has come down on the wrong side of major abortion decisions, and he authored the same-sex marriage opinion. Now President Trump has the opportunity to shape the High Court's understanding of its role in our government to correctly interpret the Constitution. He has the ability to strengthen the constitutional approach to interpreting the laws. Pray for this process and for the nominee. Stand with Liberty Counsel as we continue to pray and work to make sure that this next nominee fills the seat of Justice Anthony Kennedy and the future of America is changed forever. Go to lc.org.
If Jesus chose to form friendships with the unacceptable of his time, should we do any less? This is Jim Garlow. On more than one occasion, I have contacted persons hostile to my values and asked them, "Will you give me an hour of your time to teach me how to relate to you?" I've never been turned down. Some may criticize me for it, but I have continued to reach out to those who have the greatest influence that I can reach to see if I can have at least a civil dialogue. I've discovered great value in it. Let me say this, however. It isn't just about forming friendships. It's about speaking truth, something in rather short supply in today's culture. Let us be like the prophets of old, willing to be misunderstood to bring correction to things that are out of line. Get the details at jimgarlow.com and be prepared to live out your faith. This is Jim Garlow.
Are you caring for a vulnerable loved one, maybe a special needs child or an aging parent or a spouse with a disability? Did you know that more than 65 million Americans are currently serving as a family caregiver? And the challenges can be brutal. I know, I've been a caregiver for more than 30 years. I'm Peter Rosenberger, and I host the nation's number one radio program for family caregivers. And we're thrilled to now be broadcasting live every Saturday morning at 7 Central on American Family Radio.
You wish you could stop thinking about it, but you can't. It never quite leaves your thoughts. Even in the joyful moments, it's there. The sadness, shame, and sorrow. You know you can't go on like this, so don't. Phone the International Helpline for Abortion Recovery at 866-482-LIFE. Your call is confidential, and you'll be talking with someone who's already been where you are and found the way out. 866-482-LIFE.
Shining light into the darkness. This is the Hamilton Corner on American Family Radio
and Urban Family Talk.
Welcome back to the Hamilton Corner here on American Family Radio and Urban Family Talk. Well, the big news of the day is the announcement of President Trump's nominee to fill the seat that will be vacated on July 31st by Anthony Kennedy. And most outlets have reported, and we've talked on this program, that it's really come down to four people. Amy Coney Barrett, I don't know the full names because I'm not paying attention to it's not that I'm not paying attention, but I have my favorite. I've told you guys who I would hope the president would choose already, and I'll probably revisit that today. But you have Brad Kavanaugh, Thomas Hardiman, and you have Judge Kethledge as well. So let me make sure I say their names properly. Brett Kavanaugh, Thomas Hardiman, and Judge Raymond Kethledge. Both Kethledge and Kavanaugh are former clerks for Justice Anthony Kennedy, and Amy Coney Barrett is a former clerk of Justice Antonin Scalia. Now, I've shared before why I like Amy Coney Barrett, and I may revisit some of that today, but I want to talk a little bit more about why I don't like some of the others. You know, and right off the bat, the first one I want to discuss with you is Judge Brett Kavanaugh. Judge Brett Kavanaugh is a current judge on the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals. One of the primary reasons, well, I'll just give some more ancillary reasons, then I'll get into the meat of it. One of the things is that Judge Kavanaugh was appointed by George W. Bush. He worked in the Bush administration, was ultimately appointed by George W. Bush. Now, part of the one of the primary reasons, and these are not, you know, like one and two, it's 1A and 1B for me. Right off the top, Judge Brett Kavanaugh introduced in the Obamacare case, that's called the Seven Sky case, he introduced the legal reasoning that was ultimately adopted and implemented by Chief Justice John Roberts in upholding Obamacare. For the first time in all of its litigation, Judge Brett Kavanaugh, writing on his own, wrote in an opinion the legal argument that the individual mandate and its accompanying financial provisions was a tax, thereby setting the stage for what ultimately was upheld by Chief Justice John Roberts. Now, when you want to talk about constitutionalist application of the verbiage from the Constitution, you don't, it's a pretty egregious straying philosophically to invent in your own mind something that prior to that moment, the Obama administration wasn't even arguing that it was a tax. Because they knew one of the primary flaws is that any tax policy had to originate in the United States House of Representatives, where the legislative history indicates that Obamacare started in the Senate. Then you also have in the Garza case, where it dealt with an illegal immigrant's access to abortion, where the opportunity was ripe for condemnations of the judicial precedent that we all know as Roe versus Wade, which opportunity was taken by another judge on the same court with Brett Kavanaugh. Kavanaugh stepped away from it and even used some language in his own dissent. Now, to be fair to Kavanaugh, he argued that the abortion should not have been allowed, but his reasoning suggested something other than constitutional fidelity, okay, which is problematic. Then you have Thomas Hardiman, who I also find to be unacceptable. Thomas Hardiman, in a case called Prowl, depending on how you pronounce it, he reasoned that a gay man, which is in the opinion, he refers to him as, quote, effeminate, an effeminate man, end quote, could find relief under Title VII. Now, Title VII of the 1964 Civil Rights Act prohibits discrimination on the basis of sex, race, color, national origin, and religion. That's it. But Thomas Hardiman argued that a man who is effeminate could find relief under Title VII based on what he described as, quote, gender stereotyping, end quote. To say it simply, that would be a lean toward amending the Civil Rights Act of 1964, Title VII, to include a category of, as he said, gender stereotyping that's not in the law. If Congress wanted to include gender stereotyping as a provision in Title VII, they could have said that expressly. But that didn't stop Thomas Hardiman from making that argument. Now, let me be clear about this. These are areas and examples as to why I don't believe these people are the best for the job. I am very adamant about the fact that when you see Democrats, when they have opportunities to appoint Supreme Court justices, they're batting 1,000. They never nominate somebody to the Supreme Court and they all of a sudden become conservative. Never happens. But it happens repeatedly with Republican nominees. And in my opinion, that the time for that has to be over with, to where we go with the person who has demonstrated a commitment to constitutional fidelity, to originalist application of the Constitution, instead of using gray area nominees or stealth picks. Do I need to say the name David Souter? Do I need to say that? Let me go on. Now you have, in addition to that, you have Judge Raymond Kethledge, who has also had some issues with immigration, Some of his rulings concerning immigration have not been up to snuff for those of us who actually believe that we need to protect our nation's borders. But and beyond that, Judge Kethledge has a much briefer judicial record to where in a lot of areas where you may ask questions, you just don't know with Judge Kethledge, which again leans more toward there being a stealth pick, which is why I've concluded that it's in my view that the best of these candidates would be Judge Amy Coney Barrett, who currently sits on the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals. She has a robust record of her judicial philosophy. And I'm going to explain something that is kind of inside baseball that some of you may not be aware of. But she has, as a law professor and as a former law clerk to Justice Antonin Scalia, indicated clearly her judicial philosophy. You know where she stands on these issues. Now, here's a little bit of the inside baseball. Among the legal community, many people who have aspirations to become a judge at some point, they refrain from writing on issues that they know would be hot button issues, unless you have people that really believe in what they're writing about. So I'm sharing that with you so you can understand how impressive it is for Amy Coney Barrett to have gone on record so extensively concerning her judicial philosophy. It kind of gives the indication that she really wasn't thinking too much about becoming the federal judge at some point. Because most of the time, the people who get appointed to federal benches are those who don't have extensive records on their views. A perfect example, and I'm saying this for a reason, Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Some of you are saying, what? Ruth Bader Ginsburg? Yes, I want to have a conversation. When Ruth Bader Ginsburg was nominated for the Supreme Court, she refused to answer questions about her judicial philosophy about particular issues, Roe versus Wade and other issues. She refused to answer. People may forget because we have recency bias, but 23 years ago when Ruth Bader Ginsburg was first nominated to the high court, many of the abortion advocates were nervous about her nomination. Now, why is that? And see, this is part of the reason why I look forward to doing this program to offer you things that the talking snakes would never talk about. The facts are, ladies and gentlemen, that criticism of Roe versus Wade is not something that has been exclusively limited to conservatives. Ruth Bader Ginsburg, prior to her nomination and confirmation to the Supreme Court, had expressed questions and issues with the Roe versus Wade decision legally. To be candid about the matter, Ruth Bader Ginsburg has argued that Roe versus Wade was wrongly decided. Now, you won't hear that because, of course, she's a darling of abortion advocates, and her issue has never been whether or not she felt like abortion should be something allowed in our country. Her issue has been that she felt like Roe versus Wade was wrongly decided. Now, you don't have to just take my word for it because I have a little bit of audio for you from 2014 where Ruth Bader Ginsburg was being interviewed, I have the group's name here, by the International Women's Health Center, where she expressed some of her disagreement with the way Roe versus Wade was decided. So listen to the notorious RBG as she explains it herself. Play clip 5, please.
Roe v. Wade, that case name is probably the best known case of the second half of the 20th century. And a movement against access to abortion for women grew up, flourished around a single target. And what was that target? It was 9 unelected judges decide this question for the nation. It should be decided by the people's elected representatives, mm-hmm. by the members of the state legislature.
Mm. Now, in case you're wondering, that was the notorious RBG in her own words saying that 9 unelected justices should have never been able to foist abortion onto, and let's be calling what it is, in utero baby murder, onto the American people. That's not some conservative pundit. That's not Abraham Hamilton III. Of course, y'all know I've said it many times, and I'll say it again. That's Ruth Bader Ginsburg. So how hypocritical is it for people on the left, people who are steeped in regressive ideology, to act as though Roe versus Wade is sacrosanct? I've heard people like the senator from Maine who says she's a Republican, said it that way intentionally, Susan Collins, arguing that, oh, Roe versus Wade is settled law and should not be disturbed. And I'm saying, really? So, in your opinion, if you're going to advance the notion that previous court opinions are settled law, then that means the Dred Scott decision should have been settled law. That means Plessy versus Ferguson should have been settled law. And the thing that's so galling with that is that it's only settled law when they want the law to stay the way they want it. When it's not the way they want it, overturn it. Overturn it. You know, just in 2015, Obergefell overturned years of precedent, but they didn't care about that. In fact, let's light up the White House in rainbow colors. And it's quite frankly, it is a cowardice cop-out to say that it's settled law. Ruth Bader Ginsburg questioned the legality and the reasoning of Roe versus Wade. Why then shouldn't other people be able to do the same thing? And it just once again underscores the reality that we have in our country, unfortunately, and this goes back to what I started out by saying, that blessed is the nation whose God is the Lord. The Lord hates the shedding of innocent blood. Having a person appointed to the Supreme Court that will move us one step closer to abortion being filed into the dustbins of U.S. history would be great. And I've said it before and I'll say it again. For those who would argue that overturning Roe versus Wade will automatically result in abortion ending in America, that's just factually inaccurate. When Roe versus Wade is overturned, the only thing that will happen is exactly what you just heard Ruth Bader Ginsburg say. The issue would then immediately go to the states. Immediately. That is what would happen. And I also want to encourage all of those warriors for life who are listening to me to use Ruth Bader Ginsburg's own words to question the legality of Roe versus Wade. She said it herself. This never should have been decided by judges. Never. This is an issue that is clearly within the ambit of the state legislatures. That's the bottom line, folks. That's the bottom line. So anybody who would say, oh, we can't stand Amy Coney Barrett because she finds Roe versus Wade to be problematic. Well, guess who else does? RBG. So, I mean, that's the fact. In the question that we have for judges, the thing that should be determinative for those who would be appointed to the United States Supreme Court is their legal reasoning, not their political opinions. That's what the job of a judge is supposed to be. But we have allowed this thing to get so muddled and so out of whack to where we now, because of the fecklessness of our Congress, we've allowed the judges to do and to fill in the gaps that are created by legislators. And I left one thing out in talking about why I have problems with these other nominees. Because with Thomas Hardiman, let me get back to him for a second. He also has displayed a commitment what's known as Chevron deference. What all that is where deference is afforded to all of these extra legislative agencies, to where the agencies are giving the rulemaking capacity to make law. Agencies like the EPA and other things like that. We're not supposed to be governed by agency. We're supposed to be governed by Congress. And if you look at the numbers of legislation that has passed is minimal. What's happening is that these agencies have been advancing regulation after regulation after regulation after regulation, and we have been governed by regulation and not by legislation. I don't like Thomas Hardiman because he doesn't seem to have a problem with this whole Chevron deference thing. I think we need to get back to the proper functioning of this constitutional republic, this great American experiment that has a separation of powers where judges stay in their lane and Congress does the business of the legislature.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. You know, I'm reading through the Old Testament now, and I'm coming to places that are named that I see on our Israel tour every March. It's really fascinating to think that Jericho existed way back in the Old Testament, thousands of years ago, and I can visit there today. The same can be said for Jerusalem. The Bible literally comes to life when you visit Israel, the Holy Land. Now, we're going in March. My wife, Allison, and I, we lead these tours every March. So if you would like to go with us, you need to go to the website and check it out. It's twholyland.com, twholyland.com. If you want a brochure sent to your mailbox, just call us at 800-FAMILIES, option 5. That's 800-FAMILIES, option 5, and we'll send you a brochure.
Len Ingram of Redeem Clean felt God call him to support the American Family Association.
I'm a laundryman. I'm the son of a laundryman, too. I love clean clothes. I love the business. I love everything about it. This project was built exclusively to support AFA and AFR. There's no strings attached. Another thing that I would like to see come out of this is that I would like to see other business people feel a calling to support ministries, wherever and whatever they do to share the gospel of Jesus Christ.
In addition to your regular AFA giving, Redeem Clean Laundry Detergent allows you to increase your support of AFA just by continuing to wash your family's clothes. For clean laundry and support of a cleaner society, it's Redeem Clean. Learn more, find options, and get Redeem Clean products at afastore.net. That's afastore.net.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next. Congresswoman Maxine Waters told Americans to harass members of the Trump administration in the public square. Washington Post columnist Jen Rubin said Trump supporters should be made to feel uncomfortable. And it appears the far left has embraced those edicts. The latest to be bullied and badgered, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell and former White House advisor Steve Bannon. Bannon was inside a Virginia bookshop when he was accosted by a screaming woman. McConnell was ambushed coming out of the Kentucky diner. The menacing crowd shouted they knew where McConnell lived. And in Long Island, New York, a man was arrested after threatening to kill supporters of President Trump and Republican Congressman Lee Zeldin. I've said many times in this commentary, the Democrats have to turn down the rhetoric. Sadly, those calls have gone unheeded, and this nation is one step closer to political anarchy. I'm Todd Starnes.
The Hamilton Corner podcast and one-minute commentaries are available at AFR.net and UrbanFamilyTalk.com. Back to the Hamilton Corner on American Family Radio and Urban Family Talk.
Welcome back to the Hamilton Corner. We will take phone calls this segment, but I have a little bit more information I want to get to you. But if you want to be a part of the program, the number to call is 888-589-8840. The number to call again is 888-589-8840. I've heard some people with a lot of consternation and hand-wringing over the fact that, you know, President Trump could lose a couple Republicans, like John McCain, if he doesn't vote to confirm his nominee. He could lose Jeff Flake in Arizona. He could lose Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski, which those are concerns. They absolutely are concerns because of the thin margin that Republicans have in the Senate. If the Republicans stay together, there's nothing Democrats can do to stop them. However, if they lose a couple Republicans, they still might be able to get a few Democrats to vote for the president's nominee. I will remind everybody that Amy Coney Barrett was confirmed by a vote of 55 to 45 when she was confirmed. She got more votes than even Justice Gorsuch when she was confirmed. There were several Democrats who crossed the aisle to vote for Neil Gorsuch. Why? Because they were facing re-election in states as Democrat incumbent senators that were heavily won by President Trump in 2016. And that fact, ladies and gentlemen, is still the case. Senator Joe Donnelly in Indiana, who is a Democrat, he is facing a very tough challenge from a Republican in Indiana. It maybe even looks like the Republican will beat Joe Donnelly. Is he willing to risk his reelection by voting against President Trump's nominee? I don't know. I don't think so. Claire McCaskill in Missouri. President Trump won Missouri by 19 points. Just today, many of the regressive outlets are showing they removed the Missouri senatorial race from being a toss-up to being likely or tilting Republican. You think she wants to risk upsetting Missouri voters by going against President Trump's nominee? I don't think so. John Tester in Montana, also in the same boat. Heidi Heitkamp in North Dakota. I'm sorry, I said Missouri. I meant North Dakota. Heidi Heitkamp's race has been changed from toss-up to tilting Republican. You also have Senator Ben Nelson in Florida, who's facing a very tough challenge from the Florida Governor Rick Scott, who is very popular in Florida and who is a Republican. And then, of course, last but not least, you have Senator Joe Manchin in West Virginia. So you have at least three, if not four, five, maybe six, seven Democrat senators who very well could face losing their reelection bids if they vote against President Trump's nominee. And then you also have Doug Jones in Alabama, who's come out saying that he will make an independent vote. His party, the Democrat Party's opinion on the president's nominee, will not govern his vote. Could it be that Doug Jones realizes that if he opposes President Trump on his Supreme Court nominee, that his venture in the Senate would be very short-lived? Could be. So I'm just saying that all is not lost. I think the president has to understand that the thing that drove many of the people who voted for him to the presidency was the Supreme Court. And I believe ultimately, President Trump's decision will be weighed out in light of the fact that if he abandons Christians and conservatives on the Supreme Court, that his reelection hopes could also fall by the wayside. So I know there's lots of consternation, but I think the president will pick Amy Coney Barrett because I think, one, he's not afraid of a fight. Two, I think he recognizes that his base is behind Amy Coney Barrett. And three, which I think is most important, I think that there is something amazing going on when you consider the policies that we're getting out of the White House, because I can tell you, I, for one, did not expect President Trump to govern as conservatively as he governs, as he's governing. And I also don't think that he's arriving at these conclusions on his own. You feel what I'm saying here? So that is what I think. And I know we have to get to the phone lines, but I want to share this with you. Michelle Wolf, you remember her name? This is the comedian that horribly attacked Sarah Huckabee Sanders, Ivanka Trump, and others at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. Well, some way, Netflix gave her a special. And she used her special to take her filth to on-demand television. I want to warn you now, you have little kids in the car or they're listening, you may want to close their ears now because she is describing in utero baby murder in a way that I think is unacceptable. And I don't want to be the one to intrude upon that space with your children. So I just want to warn you now, if you want to make some adjustments, you may want to do that now. Now, having done that, let's play clip number 6 from Michelle Wolf.
Some people say abortion is killing a baby. It's not. It's stopping a baby from happening. It's like Back to the Future and abortion is the DeLorean. And everyone loves DeLoreans. Their doors open like this. And I know some people call themselves pro-life, but pro-life is a propaganda term that isn't real, like healthy ice cream.
Now, you hear that, and I wanted you to hear the laughter from this audience because you hear her making light of murdering children, you know. She says it's not killing a baby. Who's anti-science now? As if she just completely missed all the videos that we've seen of the tortured and tattered bodies of little children, how abortion doctors talk about how they have to line up all of the baby body parts to make sure they got them all out before ending the procedure. It is grotesque the way this woman and many who share her views attempt to make light of murder. And to refer to pro-life as a propaganda term, that's how you know when you have people on the intellectual ropes. Because they cannot contest with the legitimacy of an argument, so they just start calling names and trying to crack jokes. I have more clips. Let's see if I can play them back to back, because I think you need to hear this audio as if Netflix hasn't gone far enough. I mean, just last week we released from American Family Association an action alert where Netflix literally aired a series called Desire, where the show begins in its first episode with a 7 and 9 year old little girl in what could only be described as a child pornographic scene. It's sick. It's sick. Go ahead and play clip number 7 from this person.
And to be clear, this abortion fight isn't for me. I have money. I'll always be able to get an abortion.
Why is that funny? Why is that funny?
But abortion shouldn't be a luxury. It should be the new, it shouldn't be the new I summer in Montauk. It should be on the dollar menu at McDonald's. Hey, I'd like a large Diet Coke, and can you get this egg out of my McMuffin? So tonight, in honor of America, I'd like to do a salute to abortion in the Break's 10th annual Salute to Abortion.
And she plays the grand old flag music behind that. Folks, this is sick. This is sick. But this is what we're dealing with. So you have the people that have gone bonkers because they believe President Trump's nomination to the Supreme Court will stop access to this. And it's just so amazing to me that so much conversation is about inhibiting a woman's choice, as if women are just uncontrollable, you know, driven by these basic animalistic urges and have no ability to control themselves. And as if, you know, framing it as a woman's issue, as if men don't contribute to the conception of a child. And it's one of the examples of what I believe, what Romans 1 explains, that they have lost their capacity to reason. For this woman to say that it's not killing a baby, it's just wrong on so many levels. To the phone lines we go. 888-589-8840 is the number to call if you want to be a part of the program. 888-589-8840 is the number to call if you want to be a part of the program. We'll go first to Louisiana, where Daniel is on the line. Daniel, thank you for calling the Hamilton Corner.
Hi, how you doing, Abraham?
I am doing very well, Daniel. Thank you for calling the show.
Yes, sir. Thank you. I appreciate your show and your putting that information out about these Supreme Court nominees. And I agree with, well, thanks for sharing that about the nominee or the Supreme Court justice who said that it should not have been decided by the Supreme Court.
Oh, yeah, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, yeah. Sure did.
Ruth Bader Ginsburg, right. And, you know, just like how some bad soldiers shoot down helicopters with RPGs, we can shoot down that argument with an RBG.
I like it, Daniel. I like it, Daniel. We can shoot down that argument with RBG. Yes, the notorious RBG out of our own mouth said Roe versus Wade was wrongly decided. So if Ruth Bader Ginsburg can criticize Roe, why can't anybody else? Back to the phone lines, the great state of Texas, where Gary is on the line. Gary, thank you for calling the Hamilton Corner. Welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you, Hamilton, to make my day. I try to never miss your show. Main comment I wanted to make, and that is if the Democrats do manage to block the nominee, mm-hmm. I would think that would bring evangelicals out in force in the midterm election. I know so many people that when you ask, well, why are you going to vote for Trump, the answer was the Supreme Court.
Gary,
and
you
I think this would merely double everybody down on that.
Gary, you are spot on. You are spot on. And it literally, this Supreme Court vacancy has put Democrats in a very difficult position. First of all, they put themselves in this position because had they had the wisdom to not force the nuclear option on Neil Gorsuch, then Chuck Schumer and his crew would have been able to try to filibuster this nominee. Gorsuch was not going to change the balance of power on the Supreme Court at all. But I believe, as it's often said, liberalism is a mental disorder. It forces you to do things that don't line up. So now they're in this place where there's not much they can do to stop it without getting help from Republicans. So having done that, if there is an effort to thwart President Trump's nominee that'll be announced tonight at 9 Eastern, 8 p.m. Central, then guess what happens to the 2018 midterms? They've just been ramped all the way up to another notch. And that I believe it will cause Christians to turn out in droves for the senatorial elections. And that will result in a massive, massive change in the makeup of the United States Congress. So they have to pick what they want. Fight the Supreme Court nominee or fight for the midterms. Of course, what I predict, they're going to go guns blazing all out to try to stop this nominee. And I think they ultimately will not succeed. But if they do succeed, 2018 midterms just become all the more important. So that's what I think. And then I think the president could at that point offer the same nominee again, because it would be a new Senate considering her nomination or his nomination. So, but thank you very much for your call and your comments. We'll go back to the great state of Texas where Becky is on the line. Becky, thank you for calling the Hamilton Corner. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, sir.
You are welcome.
I don't know how many people read the Constitution or studied it. The Supreme Court does not make law. The Supreme Court decides a single case. A case brought in front of it. That's all the judges do. We're the ones that all of a sudden are on the bandwagon saying, oh, it's a law. No, it's not. It is a single case that was decided.
Well, Becky, thank you for your call and your comments. And what you're talking about is the constitutionally mandated separation of powers versus how those powers are enforced today. And the unfortunate reality that the branch that is entrusted with the power to rein in the court systems, which would be the Congress in most instances for all Article III courts, and even the Congress and the people, even for the Supreme Court, many of we have advocated that position. And so what happens is that we have people who don't read the Constitution and those who are entrusted in counterbalancing the courts, for example, they've abdicated that position. They've abdicated that position. So thank you very much for your call and your comments. We'll try to get one more in Louisiana where Brenda is on the line. Brenda, thank you for calling the Hamilton Corner. Welcome to the program.
Yes. Thank you for letting me talk, and I want to thank you for your contribution on the radio. My thought on the abortion thing is this. Women say they have the right to choose. They made one choice. They went to bed with a man. A child was conceived.
Yeah, Brenda, I agree with you. Of course, they would counter. Well, what about instances of rape and incest, which I've often said that, well, even incest, if it's consensual, is still consensual. But in that is a red herring argument that is offered because they know that less than 1% of all abortions are provided for the purposes of rape and so on and so forth. And the facts show that even women who conceive babies in rape, most of them want to have their babies. So those arguments are those that are offered to make an emotional appeal that doesn't line up with the facts. The reality is the Lord hates the shedding of innocent blood.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.